Hello and welcome to the Ecosystemic Futures podcast presented by NASA Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project in collaboration with Shoshimworks, a global firm helping organizations and nations navigate ecosystemic transformation. As our world is increasingly digital and interconnected, ecosystemic models are reshaping society, industry, economy, and policy, and reframing how we build for resilient futures. Today, we're continuing our investigation into the ways that AI is informing ecosystems across industry and society, and exploring how the evolution of AI has impacted many very large, complex, world-changing projects, as well as the impact on society, the societies that they serve. I'm Diane Finkhausen, CEO and founder of Shoshimworks, and today I'm joined by my co-host, Mark Stephen Meadows, science fiction writer and researcher for NASA's CAS project. Mark?
Thanks, Dan. I met Jan several years ago working in blockchain, virtual reality, and artificial intelligence, and a mutual friend said, you have to talk to Jan about this. He's doing that too. And I thought, that's insane. This guy has got to be someone either utterly off the loop or worth talking to. I'm a technologist, I'm an author, I'm an artist, and as Diane mentioned, currently working as a researcher and science fiction writer.
Fantastic. Well, I am thrilled that you've made the connection, Mark, because in our many subsequent conversations, I've just been fascinated by Jan's perspective, work, and worldviews, and have been really looking forward to bringing this conversation into the podcast series. So again, today we're welcoming Jan Bunga, former landscape architect who has pivoted into leading large-scale, world-changing, interdisciplinary projects such as city planning and many other exciting examples. As director at Squint Opera, Jan has built global partnerships to support these projects and leveraging the advanced technological tools and models and processes in order to solve for both unique experience and brilliant outcomes. So we're going to talk today about the implications and applications of AI, but really on a much more strategic perspective, Jan is going to walk us through kind of his journey in how he has brought all of these lifelong learnings into better approaches for the design of complex kind of wicked opportunities and programs such as city plans for cities and organizations. So Jan, very excited to introduce you and dive into this conversation. Maybe if you can just share a little bit of your background with the audience, then we'll dive into the discussion from there.
Sure. First, thank you so much for having me. And I really enjoy our conversations and looking forward to this one. I'm a trained landscape architect who went into urban design, and the first kind of 12 years of my professional life, I found myself spending a lot of time trying to explain these often extremely ambitious and complex and very long projects. If you think about urban development, it's not unusual for master plans to take 20, 30, 40, 50 years to get implemented, and they are in themselves extremely complex endeavors, and therefore there's a massive need to bring along a lot of different stakeholders. And 12 years ago, I made a career shift to fully focus on this communication aspect of that work, because I really felt you can have the greatest idea in the world. If you don't manage to properly communicate it, your chances of succeeding are really small. And I was in the lucky position to be able to join Squint Opera, which is a company that is focused on exactly that particular niche. Squint Opera produces anything you could possibly need to communicate these very large-scale projects in the built environment, anything from strategic advice on how to go about, and then any kind of media, literally from presentations to images to interactive media to films. And more, we ended up building virtual worlds, meaning we have started to turn 3D models, which were made by engineers and architects, made by technicians, for technicians, really. And we're taking those 3D models and turn them into virtual environments that non-technical people can experience. So that's really our focus today.
Just double-clicking into that, Jan, I think it's fascinating how your journey has led you to the realization and really perfection of how you can use these advanced technology tools like AI and other simulation tools in order to simplify complexity across these very long cycle multidisciplinary teams and projects, and then accelerate learnings and support more transparent and connected and cohesive communications. So maybe if we explore that a little bit with our audience. So if you take an example like a city planning effort, many years in many cases, a very complex landscape of stakeholders, outcomes, objectives. And in those cycles, you might have election cycles, you have an evolving stakeholder and priorities landscape. How do you maintain that and still drive the best outcomes and bring the landscape of stakeholders along with you in that journey?
Yeah, I think the most important dimension of our time really and is us our ability to articulate our underlying intent and our vision. And there's no difference here. Those projects, in order to safeguard those complex projects, on one level, what they really require is a clearly articulated long-term vision. And once you have achieved that goal, I think there is another really important dimension, which is, if you think about it, the success or failure of any spatial experience, any place you go to, any building you visit, the moment that you enter a space, whether it's a park or a lobby, you have a feeling, because we humans are amazing spatial sensors, and we are designed to experience these spaces emotionally, right? And so arguably the design or the success or the failure of any of those designs gets decided the moment people experience it. But once it's built, it's very difficult to change, meaning it's costly and almost impossible in many cases to change. And so in today's world, what we are trying to do is we are trying to really test the experience. You could think of it as experiential performance of the space or social performance of the space in a virtual setting. So in addition to simulations that are focused on optimizing the environmental performance or the economic performance of those projects, we are very much focused on figuring out how you can possibly test the experiential dimension. Because at the end of the day, that is really what defines the success or failure of those projects. And it's also, I think, funny to note that we're living in a time where not only do you fear the space, you also tell all your friends in that particular moment. And so it is, you know, arguably even more important today to have a big emphasis on the experience that people have in those future cities.
Yeah, it's true, because I find myself oftentimes just checking in, well, for reality checks with friends and people I trust. I mean, we're really at this dawn of AI, or at least in the third AI spring, I guess. And while understanding its capabilities and implications is broad, and we face these significant challenges of ensuring validity and the ethical use of data, interpretability, and tracing what happens in building trust with these systems, I'm wondering, in projects that impact society, how do we effectively guide teams to work with AI? How do you lead teams through this path, making sure the project is even on the right path at this kind of an early juncture with such massive change?
It's a really good question. And I think it's maybe one of the most important questions, because I think one has to step back one moment and remember that there is no such thing as apolitical data, right? The moment that you decide to collect a certain data set that you feed into those systems, you make a decision that will impact the outcome, right? And so the discussion, in my opinion, really has to start with a very simple question around what is it that we are trying to achieve? What is our underlying intent? And if we look at how we have collected data in cities today, it is that in most cases, I think you will find that information was collected based on kind of personal interest or opinion or political agendas, right? And so I think we're really ill-equipped at this moment in time to feed those advanced algorithms with the data that we have. And in many cases, I think we have to be honest about that, and we have to say, okay, it's not going to be easy, right? We're going to have to step back and really evaluate why we are collecting this particular data and not this other data set, right? So, but the other dimension of this question, I think, is a question around how much accuracy do you actually need, or how granular do you want to go, right? If you look at a project scale and you need, it's pretty granular and pretty detailed, the information that you need, then current systems are very labor intensive to use because you would have to validate all the data sets and you have to normalize them and validate them and structure them and all that. But if you're just interested in a trend that is maybe a city or a country scale trend, we do have the ability to feed unstructured data into those systems, because the one thing that those algorithms are very good at is identifying patterns, right? And so the way I look at it is that if we are feeding those systems with a lot of unstructured data, what we get out of it is a good starting point for discussion. It will not tell us what to do, but it will show us things that we might have overlooked. But in each of those analyses, we have to be honest about the underlying intent, and we have to be able to spot the bias and discuss how we can possibly move towards a future where we have the most apolitical or the least biased foundational data sets available to us. And if I don't think there's something wrong with political agenda. We have to have agendas. We have to have a vision, but we have to be clear about it. We have to be honest about it, because it is like most of those systems, the way they work is that if you put shit in, you get shit out. And they're not magically able to fix societal problems that we have. That is still on us, right? And so in some way, I believe it was maybe never as important as a society for us to come together and to have those discussions around what is it actually that we are trying to achieve? What kind of future cities do we want to our children to live in, right? And so in that sense, I'm really excited, because it kind of forces us to do something we maybe should have done quite some time ago. And yeah, definitely a good exercise.
You raise a great point, Jan, we're touching on a theme that has come up a lot in our AI series here, our AI season, and it's just this kind of persistent design element of choice, right? To your point, I like the way you put it, right? There is no such thing as apolitical data, right? The decision to collect, the decision to filter, the decisions that humans take in the data elements and the operational elements of these systems imbues naturally some degree of bias. And that bias may not always be apparent to the users of those systems. And so the experience is affected. How do we think about removing some of that bias, or at least exposing or being very honest to your point about the layers of choice that have informed these systems, and in order to hopefully encourage greater trust in the experiences and the outcomes that the systems are designed to affect?
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
I think on one level, I would love to suggest that at this moment in time, these systems are interesting conversation starters. That's what they're generating, right? They don't create some sort of truth per se, but it is, but they can definitely help us uncover things good and bad that we might have overlooked in the past. But it's a dialogue, right? And I'm actually of the opinion that if anything, we have to involve more humans in those future processes. It's not less humans, right? That's not going to work, at least for quite a while. So at this early stage, and it is really, I think, important to remember that people have talked about these city-scale simulations for decades. And there has been a lot of companies on this planet promoting in their marketing material their abilities since the last 10 years, at least, that were kind of exciting. And some managed to sell systems to cities. But I think it's very true that none of those were actually able to deal with the level of complexity that cities represent. And the truth is that we are just now entering a time where we have the necessary compute power and we have advances in machine learning that slowly open a door where we can allow ourselves to hope that there will be progress, right? But we're not there at all, right? We're at the beginning of the exploration. And in this beginning phase, the most important thing is that we come together and we figure out what we care about and we agree what our shared values are. And then this becomes an instruction manual for designing the necessary processes that will then lead us to collect the right data that we need to support us in achieving our goals. Right.
You've got like a triumvirate here that's awesome, right? And these first thing that there's no such thing as apolitical data. Okay, I will hang my hat on that until the cows. Secondly, we need to look at what we care about and what shared values we have. Okay, again, these are strong principles that we must adhere to. So how can we confront the future? And what are new social models of collaboration and invention that we can consider? What's an example? I mean, mm-hmm. These are awesome ideals, right? And I would like for you to please talk about an example of an emerging work model that's interesting to you today.
Yeah.
What is something that you see that helps us push these ideals into pragmatic action?
Yeah. So at this moment in time, I think there's quite some movement globally. In the UK, you can find a rising movement of citizen assemblies where people come together and discuss what it is that they're trying to achieve or what they stand for, right? And I think that is something, as a civil society, that has to be the starting point. And you can see that in smaller groups or on a city scale happening, at least in some countries around the world. I find it very inspiring, and I think it's a must. Then I think the environment in which I'm most comfortable at the moment is a sandbox environment in which we create a hyper-transparent environment in which we can prototype and test those solutions and constantly analyze them, right? And that is really a collaboration between all disciplines involved, from the data scientists to the engineers, to the planners, to the citizens, right? We all need to build these sandbox environments together. And there's not many around the world, right? You have a bunch of cities in the UK. You will find a bunch of kind of innovative projects around the world, but they're by far not enough. And I think there's a real danger that we get kind of hypnotized by the marketing promises of large corporate entities that are really either wanting to sell software licenses or more of their hardware. That is important to understand, right? What drives these industries, right? They are software platforms. They have a licensing model. So they will do anything to justify their product pitch. But again, I think it's dangerous to rush at this moment in time, because the truth is we haven't figured it out. It is day one, in this. And only because we have been talking about it since the 60s doesn't mean that it's solved now. And yes, there has been amazing progress and amazing, it's an exponential, it was exciting the last 12 months to see what's happening. But I think, A, we are on day one, and B, it's also good to remember that there might be an AI winter also, right? We cannot expect that this exponential development will just continue forever, because it never has in the past, at least.
And I mean, this idea of the corporate hypnosis is an extremely potent notion that as we travel between different countries, we see that hypnosis is able to span different cultures and languages, but it's the same kind of idea. There was an interesting project by NFT God in which they went and they used a version of ChatGPT, I think it was. They had an agent that was running that was able to develop some tasks, and they went through and looked at actually how it could hack a democratic process, say one that's happening in states and elections. All right. So we know this is here. We know this is happening today. It's possible now. And the details and the technological background of that, I'm going to set to the side. Just for our listeners, please research NFT God, and you'll find that there's some pretty cool work that artist has done. This comes to mind, Jan, not only because NFT God might be one of these groups that are doing this kind of highly transparent experimentation. It also seems to me to hearken to the kind of the capabilities that hypnosis allude to, where we have not just corporate entities, but I really am now thinking of AI more as being like a corporate entity itself. It's just a matter of maybe weeks until we see these things having some kind of legal identity that allows them to perform actions, just as we have corporates today able to embrace the idea of identity as a person. Okay. How do these two different kinds of hypnoses work together? How can we blend them? How can we fight fire with fire? How do we take what look like very large systems that are collapsing over our heads and navigate through that kind of a storm? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I think the thing I'm most excited about, and I mean, this is without being too banal, right? I do think there is, we are in a moment, in a kind of Star Wars moment of good against evil, right? And the nature of these technologies is that you can use it for both, right? When I started venturing into this area many years ago, the people who were the fastest and the most advanced 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago were either insurance companies or hedge funds, right? One wanted to make sense of the world because they had to insure against the potential losses, and the other one wanted to hedge their bets, right? And so I think it's just something we have to accept that this is all exists in parallel, right? This is, it's a multidimensional phenomenon. And what I'm interested in, obviously, is to identify the people, and I think that's an important point. Now is the moment, I believe, to create alliances and networks that are aligned in some sort of fundamental value system that they share. And you see this happening all over the place, right? And people have different values, and that's completely fine. But all this will happen in parallel, right? To your agent example, I had a very lovely discussion yesterday because I'm fascinated by the idea that if you think beyond human-centric design and human-centric approaches, we can now start to imagine that we can have non-human actors in those discussions, because we can simulate animals and plants and even concepts like fresh air or the soil, right? And this opens doors to ideas like, could I set up a venture capital fund with non-human LPs? Because I would argue that just focusing on human needs and human-centered design didn't really work. It got us to where we are now, right? And now we have to understand that, obviously, we are part of a massive, much bigger ecosystem, and we have to move towards ecosystemic approaches and from circularity to regenerative to ecosystemic. And I am hopeful that AI will help us to deal with these levels of complexity. And you can see the first experiments, Lucid Minds and Dark Matter Labs here in the UK have done a project called Tree AI, where they started to look at what trees contribute in cities. They
in terms of the with the end goal to coming to some sort of value, right? Because we are still facing everything on monetary value somehow, right? But you can look at, okay, it's great. And it cleans the air. It actually helps you focus when you're studying to look at a tree, right? It has an impact on the groundwater, has an impact on the soil. There's some sort of microbiome around the tree that and so that I find extremely hopeful and interesting. On the other hand, I think it's sad that we all know that trees are important, right? Do we need AI to tell us and show us, right, the numbers, right? I feel like almost it's like a crutch, right, that we seem to need in order to make things clear that are clear since a very long time, but somehow they haven't fully sunken in, or they're not strong enough, the arguments. And so maybe there's a possibility to use machine learning to just validate assumptions, right, that we have. And yeah, and especially in the simulation space, I think the idea to be able to extend those simulations beyond trying to simulate human experience, but, you know, introduce all these non-human actors, I think is exciting.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And we have to make sure that we're maintaining space for humanity, right, and the human experience in this very kind of exciting new era of advanced technologies and models. But I'd like to just double click into Mark's earlier question as well. I think there is a lot of focus on big change, big impact, big programs that can be achieved, and impossible missions that can be resolved through the application of these technologies in AI and simulation, et cetera. But if you are an entrepreneur, right, a startup, a small business in this environment, it can be quite daunting, right? So, Jan, if you think about the entrepreneurs out there that are really trying to navigate this brave new AI era, what are some practical pathways based on your experience that can be helpful for them? Kind of putting those alliances together and looking for those synergies and complementarities is certainly helpful. But if you think about that very daunting experience of, say, a space startup or entrepreneur, how do they navigate this?
I was positively surprised in our industry how people have come together across the industry, and how I think we all discovered early on that this is just too complex for any one small company to figure out by themselves. Even larger companies are struggling to do this on their own, right? And so what we have seen here in London is that we suddenly had a lot of meetups and a lot of moments where R&D labs came together and we started to dividing up the tasks and said, okay, we all try to figure out similar things. Let's try to not double up on the research as much as we can. And so I was really inspired by this fact that a lot of people came together in my industry, at least, to share their experiences, because we are constantly learning, and it's also constantly changing, right? It's a very fast moving evolution that we are part of. And so I think one thing that is maybe worth noting is that it's quite funny in a way that if you look at our inability to deal with this phenomenon, it becomes very clear when we look back at all the predictions that were made around AI in the past. And the majority was wrong, and they were wrong because fundamentally we struggle to understand how exponential systems work, because there's very little exponential stuff happening in our normal lives, right? And this is true for what we are seeing and happening in our environment, and us not being able to get a grip on climate change and understanding climate change. And it's the same with AI. Right? And what happens then is that we end up in this really polarized reality where I talk to people who are unbelievably sensitized and worried about our future in terms of ecosystems collapsing and the environment really failing on large scale. And then I talk to other people the next day who tell me that this is not even a thing, right? And so we're not even close to understanding us, each other, right, on these topics. And I think to a similar degree, we have this problem with AI, that because of its exponential nature, it is very difficult for us to grapple and to understand. And so all we can do really is come together and collectively explore and share our learning.
Yeah. I mean, it's really this image that you present, one of radical divergence, but also kind of an asymptotic convergence at times of misunderstandings, where we have highly political data, the shit in, the shit out. Trees, I guess, offers us a solution there, but also really whether or not we can use this sort of social prosthetic of artificial intelligence to our own benefit. Be smart enough to actually say, oh, we built this thing. Now we can look at it as being something that is inherently political, inherently biased. And maybe we can, just as we have with people and corporations in the past, be able to navigate those barriers and those problems. I was wondering if you would talk a little bit more, just to go back a bit. You're proposing some models of radical transparency and some ways in which groups can work ahead. Could you maybe mention a couple of groups, if you know of any that are doing that, or maybe if there's participation you have in some of these groups, just to for listeners and myself, I'd be interested just to go and research some of those places.
So there's, again, I think the vision, if we all agree that we have kind of a mammoth challenge or multiple challenges in front of us, and the only way to solve some of them is by us finding ways to truly co-creating and therefore co-owning IP and really collaborating in a much more transparent manner, I have engaged with many different people and organizations promoting different tools, but I do believe that nobody has found the perfect solution yet, right? There's different approaches that are worth trying and looking at. It is really, I personally came to the conclusion that all we can do at this moment in time is pick one of them and then iterate and improve them based on our own experience. Yeah, one of the things that I am focused on going forward is exactly this particular question. And this is born out of my own frustration that I was not able to find the perfect platform that helps you to share knowledge in the way that we should and really track contributions in a way that allow us to allocate value to truly co-create and co-own IP. If anyone out there has a perfect solution, I would be very happy to talk to them. But I think the truth is that we have to build those solutions and we have to build them in an open source manner. I think it's an important point to understand that when we started exploring these large simulations 10 years ago, it was a marketing proposition, really, right? And in marketing, you can say anything, right? And make any kind of promise. But now that we're coming closer to reality, it's important to realize that imagine the complexity of towns and cities in themselves, and then realize that it's different in every country, in every region of this planet, right? It's not the same. The way people collect data, the way they're organized, the way they're structured, the legal structure, everything is different. And so I think it's impossible for me to believe that there could be a corporate entity that can create a proprietary solution that can deal with this level of complexity. It's just impossible to customize for all of those use cases. And so that means that at the core, these solutions have to be built in an open source spirit. And only if you create this kind of shared tool set that we all can iterate on and constantly improve on, only then can I see a chance for us to move into a future where we can base decision making on profound insight, right? And that really has to be the goal. I mean, I think there's a bunch of goals, right? And I think at the beginning we talked about the fact that obviously we're striving to create cities which are inclusive and good for all. But also, I think it's extremely important to figure out ways in which we can deal with this level of complexity. And yeah, for me, the only way is to support a collective effort to build open source tool sets.
It really sounds, Jan, to me, like you are imagining a new kind of city. You are moving into another world in which your past in Germany, working with very small communities and then building physical places and building virtual places. Now you're extending that thinking out and looking at new kinds of city structures.
Yeah, but I'm not on my own, right? I mean, the lovely thing is that if you're on the larger scale, right, if you look at what ESA and a bunch of other European agencies are planning in terms of creating a digital twin of planet Earth, that logic, this program follows the same logic where at the core, they are promoting an open source platform of a suite of tools that will allow us to get to that point. So, but yes, I think it's definitely time to build new solutions because, frankly, what we're currently doing is not working.
Yeah, no, we often liken this to the roads and the bridges of the past, right, that helped us establish the infrastructure for cities and communities. Right. Today's version is what we're talking about here, the pipes, the protocols, right, and the digital infrastructure and connections. And that's a new set of infrastructure that established new and extended kinds of connections in this new city that Mark alludes to and that we can see through your vision here, Jan. And I think for me, that's the key takeaway from this conversation, that this is a new level of infrastructure that can help us establish connections and experiences and that now can enrich and elevate the human experience in new ways. But to design those experiences requires intention and thoughtful decisions and transparency. To your point, we have the opportunity to open source a lot of that with these new tools. So with that, I think we'll have to wrap it up from here and would just encourage everyone to please stay tuned and be sure to follow Jan's work and see where this takes us all. But make sure to check out this season's new episodes every Tuesday as we dissect more of how AI is and can be leveraged to support human experience and ecosystemic resilience. And again, follow us and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and your favorite place to access podcasts. And you can always learn more at shoshimworks.com. And again, I'd love to, again, extend our gratitude and thanks to Jan and Mark for a great discussion today. Thank you again. Great stuff.